And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. We have a video that we're going to play for you here now. You'll just be able to hear the audio of it. It's the name of the video is Botany Candidates on Asset Sales. There is an election campaign going on in Auckland at the moment, and asset sales and privatisation in general has become quite the hot political issue. So without further ado, I'll just play this for you here now.
This is a core issue here. Absolutely not. Why would you sell off the goose that is laying the golden eggs? Now, I have a track record that goes back 12 years now, particularly relating to water privatisation, totally opposed, and of course public-private partnerships. Partial privatisation is like partial pregnancy. There is no such thing. But of course, because the P word is so unpopular, this John Key-led government's now referring to mixed ownership. How are the mums and dads who are struggling to pay their power bills going to afford to be investors in the power company? Remember the bad old days when you used to be able to afford to put your heater on, when you actually had an electricity department and power boards? What was broken? Rogernomics wrecked it.
If the state assets are profitable, why we sell? If the state assets is not profitable, who will buy? All due to the very bad management and very short-term decision.
Selling public assets to private people is not the only answer. This is not a long-term solution. The current government is borrowing $300 million a week. We have got to stop that spending.
Well, Telecom and Kiwi Rail went well, didn't they? I feel this issue quite deep down in my bones. As I look around this room, I can see people from generations who built up this country and built the assets that make us work. And it makes me incredibly angry to think that we might have a short-term generation of politicians now who repeat the mistakes of the 1980s and 90s. Sale of these assets will mean overseas ownership of our key infrastructure, and they will mean higher prices for New Zealanders who cannot afford them now. These assets are currently run in the national interest for the benefit of everyone in New Zealand. Why would we change that and give away our sovereignty?
I'm pleased Mr. Wood raises the 80s, because we've learned from the mistakes of ministers like Phil Goff selling off state assets 100%. What the government's saying is it's seeking advice on a mixed ownership model. The reality is we need to invest in assets for the future. We have to consider how we pay for them. You can either increase debt. We don't want to see that happening too much. You can either increase taxes to pay for them, or you can consider realigning the way that you have your own current assets at the moment. The government's saying that if it is elected at the end of the year, it will look at maintaining a 50% shareholding. There will still be government control over these assets. It will be offered to New Zealanders first and foremost, and it will give New Zealanders an opportunity to invest in good quality New Zealand companies.
How could I vote for you when I'm totally against state-owned asset sales?
If you're completely opposed to any sales, then I'm happy to say I'm probably not the person for you.
Welcome back. Now, the first person who was speaking in that video there, her name is Penny Bright. She's a judicially recognised public watchdog who has come on the show with us a few times before, and she joins us now live from her activist hub home in Auckland, New Zealand. Penny, welcome back to the program.
Oh, hi, Vinnie. Thank you.
Could you just explain to us a little bit more about what's going on in this video here?
Right. What's going on in this video here is it is the pivotal question, in my view, in this election campaign, because it's an opportunity where the voting public of the Botany electorate, which is in the eastern part of Auckland, they can actually use their vote to give a very clear message to this shonky John Key-led government that they don't want a bar
of privatisation or asset sales. And the fact is that by-elections are very unpredictable creatures and they are an opportunity for a protest vote. And what's shaping up, it's actually very, very interesting because in terms of the lineup of the political forces, if you like, there's the national candidate, Jamie Lee Ross. He's 25 going on 40. He's been a career politician since he was 18. And he is a capable and articulate young National Party hack. And I say that in a caring way, but he got the job because he is able to articulate National Party policies. But of course, being tied to a party machine...
Hold on a second. When you say articulate, do you mean repeat?
Well, articulate means he is capable of explaining National Party policy. Okay? He's quite articulate in doing that. But he is
like reading off the sheet, though.
Well, basically. Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, and also, I mean, I'm trying to be fair here. I mean, compared with other, there are other National Party people, a bit thick. But, you know, Jamie Lee, I would not characterise him as being thick.
Yeah, he's not stupid like Nikki Kaye.
No, he's not stupid. He's not stupid. But the bottom line is he's been groomed, for a parliamentary career since he was 18. So one of the concerns that I know a number of National Party voters have is, well, what has he done in his life? What is his life experience? And, I mean, it's not a lot. But in terms of political track record, what has he done for the public? That's the other issue. What has he done? And the point that I tried to make at this candidate debate, because he's trying to make a big deal that he's from the local area, well, that's all very well and good. But what I believe is far more important than geography is policy and track record, because whose interests has he been serving? I mean, I know that being involved in fighting water privatisation and opposing commercialising of water services, which is running them as a profit-making business, and introducing user pays for wastewater charges, which allows rates to be dropped for the high-value property owners and dumping it on the poorer families who need to use more water and therefore wastewater, because the wastewater charge is based on the water charge, so the more water you use, the higher your wastewater bill is going to be. Well, I actually played a significant role about 3 years ago helping to successfully lobby Manukau City Council, which Jamie Lee Ross was a councillor on, to stop them introducing user pays for wastewater. Now, when it came to the vote on that issue, Jamie Lee was on the other side of the fence. He was on the side of the wealthy, high-value property owners who want their rates dropped and they wanted user charges that would have disproportionately affected the poorer families. So, I do have a track record in the area, although I don't live there.
Well, you know, and that was one thing that Jamie Lee Ross seemed to repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat. Sorry. Sorry.
Benny, I've told you a million times not to repeat yourself.
A little bit of a circle there. I live in the area and I talk to the community. I talk to the community and I live in the area and I live in the area and I talk to the community. It's like, hold on a sec, mate. Repeating yourself several dozen times, although it's effective at brainwashing people, it's not indicative of intelligence or policy-making ability, or, for that matter, a grand backbone and ability to think on your feet, in my opinion.
Well, what was very interesting was, during this by-election campaign, I've actually encountered New Zealand Prime Minister John Key on about three occasions in 3 weeks. He must have felt positively stalked. That's just how it worked out. But it's been Year of the Rabbit, and there were a couple of occasions where there were celebratory events. And on the second one, the go is they have the lion dance, and that leads the dignitaries into the main area where they're going to speak, and then the Prime Minister's there shaking hands with people and trying to pretend he cares about ordinary people when he couldn't really give a stuff. But I was about 3 feet away from him, and of course he sees me because I'm wearing my uniform, which is my scarf, because I've got to have something to hide the horns on my head, of course. And you've never seen a more faked, phony, forced smile in your life. And then what happened was I went into the main area where they had stores, and there was a National Party stall there, and they had a couple of MPs, and they had staff, and they were busy handing out glossy pamphlets, because they've got lots of money to hand out glossy pamphlets. But there was nothing there about Jamie Lee Ross, and it was all John Key stuff. Well, here's me with my little budget, 4 to a page of black and white A4, and I'm just, I mean, I've given out millions of bits of paper in my life. So I set myself up just a few feet away from the National Party stall, and I've got a big cheery grin on my face, and I'm busy handing my stuff out. And Jamie Lee's there, and he looks a bit taken aback, and he says, "Oh, we've only got the boss's stuff." And I said, well, that's not very onto it, is it, Jamie? But he refers to the Prime Minister as the boss. So, I mean, with all due respect, how much is he going to challenge from even within the caucus? Because the track record is when MPs first get elected and they go into the back benches, they are told to sit down, shut up, and do as you're told. Well, I'm not beholden to any party, and I can tell you right now that hopefully when I'm elected as a public watchdog from inside the House, and I don't think that's been done anywhere, not to my knowledge, well, I'll be hitting the ground running because I've already been down to Parliament. I've met senior parliamentary staff. I've got my copy of parliamentary standing orders, which are the rules, you know, that you're supposed to follow when you're inside the House. And the senior party staffer, when I asked him, well, as an independent MP, what can I do, what can't I do? What I can do is I can ask ministers unlimited written questions. I mean, I do a lot of Official Information Act requests anyway, but this senior parliamentary staffer thought that given my track record, I'd be able to ask better questions than a lot of current MPs. I would also have access to parliamentary library staff researchers. Woohoo! I mean, I do all this work myself. The concept of having staff that could help, I mean, that just absolutely blows me away. So I would be able to ask hard questions from inside the House, because what I want to do, I want to know, where is our public money going? Who is benefiting? Exactly to whom has New Zealand become indebted?
Well, Penny, this is what I want to ask. I want to ask, rather than where's our money going to, where's it coming from? You see, I mean, well, that's the problem with me. I mean, I thought a lot of that debate was kind of like musical chairs shuffling around the currency when it's in New Zealand. I'm saying this whole country gets its money from foreign privately owned banks.
Well, the thing is that I believe on a line-by-line accounting basis, the New Zealand public are entitled to know where exactly our money's coming from and where it's being spent. Because I can tell you right now that I've already done a lot of work at local government level, and what I've found out is that we're not being told. I mean, people talk about the bureaucracy at central and local government. Well, I want to, again, push this word that I've made up called the contractocracy, because I tell you right now, that is where the bulk of the money's going. I know that for a fact. At what used to be Auckland City Council, 85% of $1 billion spend in 2008-2009 was going on the contractocracy, private suppliers of goods, services and people, and less than 15% was being spent on in-house council staff, the bureaucracy. So what happens is the right-wingers make a big deal, oh, we've got to get rid of the bureaucracy. Well, hang on a minute. What do they replace them with? Contractors, which cost far more money in the first place.
It's people here or people there. It's people here or people there, right? It's people under column A or people under column B. They would argue it's still job creation.
Oh, well, I mean, that is just, it's just garbage, because what you've got to do, you've got to look at cost effectiveness of public money, prudent stewardship and fiscal responsibility. These words have got to be meaningful. And if you don't know where the money's going in the first place, then how can you look at saving money? And that's what's got me with the Auckland Super City, because though here I was trying to do my best as a mayoral candidate, trying to expose that it was a corporate takeover of the Auckland region, which it is, and we were given all this garbage about how there'd be economies of scale, blah, 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 and the first thing this new council wants to do is put the rates up 5%. And what happened is I did an Official Information Act to the New Auckland Council, and I said, I want to know who's got the contracts on a council by former council by council basis, which council services, because there's potentially 112 of them, sort of from dog control to zoning, which council services are provided in-house, which are commercialised, run as a council-controlled organisation, or which are contracted out. And which of those that are contracted out, what's the name of the contractor? The term?
Well, say we free up public money, say we free up the coffers and we stop this corruption that's going on, because I know for a fact, it's just like the US government, they're handing out contracts to their pals, Halliburton, yep, Unocal, and they're lining their own pockets, and they've got backroom deals going on, and they're increasing share prices of their own stock and all the rest of it. That's
yep.
a given.
Yep.
That's a given. But even if we clean that up, we still have a fiat currency. We still have the real buying power of the New Zealand dollar depreciating against the cost of living. So real buying power. And that's what I'm concerned about. How do we make life raise the bar? There's always going to be rich and poor. There's always going to be greed. And there's always going to be people who aren't interested in greed. You know, and well, so there's always going to be a disparity. We can't have equality in total egalitarian society. So how do we raise the bar so that the people in Otara can afford the basic essentials to life and don't have to fight each other over it? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, bottom line is that there's corporate welfare versus social welfare, and these are more other facts that I want to get. How much of our public money is going on corporate welfare? And across all the different state sectors, education, health, the whole nine yards, I want a detailed breakdown of how much money is being spent, as I say, on in-house service provision versus the contractocracy, because I believe it's time for a great, big, very sharp scalpel to be applied to all that corporate consultancy and contractocracy blubber. It needs to be sliced off.
Well, how do they get the public money? That's what I say. Cut off their supply of the public money, which means taxation.
Well, the point is that's the money's come in the form of tax, and that's another question. Who's paying the tax? Because if I do become an MP, I mean, you'll get a load of this, the starting rate per year for a backbench MP, guess how much that is?
120 or something? $134,000
a year. I mean, I've been surviving on 10, okay? So I survive on the smell of an oily rag. So what I will be doing is still, I mean, I live very frugally, and what I will be doing is setting money aside, because what I want to do, I want to bring over some overseas experts like this Professor Prem Sika from Essex University, and he is a world expert on corporate taxation. And what I want to do is to get these issues raised about how much money are corporates spending in tax.
Okay, our very special guest is Penny Bright, coming at us live from her command bunker in New Auckland, New Zealand. And we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you proudly by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Anybody out there hardcore enough to take a megaphone and run up to your Prime Minister and call him a scumbag? I'm game. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest joining us as a regular collaborator on this show is Penny Bright, broadcasting live from her Resistance Manifesto bunker in Auckland. Penny, welcome back.
Cheers, Vinny. a very, very significant thing happened this week. I had a meeting with Mr. David Hall, who is the director of the Public Service International Research Unit based at Greenwich University. He is arguably the world expert on privatisation. And what he does is he helps to organise research and writes research, which is used internationally. Just Google him, David Hall, PSIRU, and find out for yourself. I met David Hall in 2003 over at Kyoto, and that was the World Water Forum, to which 60 world water warriors had been invited internationally, and I was one of those. And so what happened was the World Water Forum, that was organised by multinational water companies, and we were there putting the case for the public that there was no consensus for privatisation via public-private partnerships. And the highlight of the conference was when we stormed up onto the stage when there was a ministerial panel and we had our big banners against the World Water Mafia, etc., and we made it very clear there was no consensus. And I was one of the six people that had one of the banners in my bag, and it was just like situation normal. Learned it all from Auckland City Council. Thank you, John Banks. So, but it was absolutely marvellous to be for 10 days with 60 international world water activists. It was just pig heaven. And I took over 10 metres of yellow parka fabric and three big fat black felt tip pens, which have revolutionised the protest movement, I have to say. And every day, there's about 20,000 delegates. It was massive. We actually had, we walked around with these strips of yellow parka fabric and we had our message on it. And so every day we were in the local media, they had a media attachment to the conference. And what happened was the war in Iraq broke out while we were there, and they had this giant CNN cinema screen, and there were like six of us who stood in front of it with banners like on whose authority. And my one was the world's people thirst for water, not blood or oil. And it made the BBC's World Web front page. So seize the moment. Yeah, anyway, so David Hall, that's where I first met him. Lovely guy. And what I put to him was, David, I believe that those of us fighting privatisation and those fighting corruption, we need to join forces, because the root basis for privatisation, that is the basis of corruption. Who gets the contracts? And he agreed. So I'm absolutely thrilled about that. And he's seen some of the research that I've done exposing what I believe is corruption in New Zealand local government. And he thought that my work was fantastic. So Penny Bright is having a Skype, and I think if a world expert on research thinks my research is fantastic, well, thank you very much. I will take the compliment. So it was absolutely marvellous to see him. And I think that's going to be a very significant development internationally. Because if someone like David supports that, then we should be able to really get some movement. And I'd like to see the whole Rogernomics neoliberal model being attacked on the basis of conflicts of interest and corruption. And
it's the bread and butter of government, though, isn't it, Penny? I mean, in my experience, and it's relatively short term of experience, granted, but corruption and dodginess is so commonplace that I would say it happens the majority of the time.
Well, the thing is, it wasn't always like that. I mean, the thing is that it's been the private procurement of public services which has really helped to spread corruption, because once upon a time, so many of these essential public services, they were provided by central and local government. They weren't contracted out.
But the country was still stuffed, Penny. I mean, I still see it as a problem. Like, I think we need a more fundamental changes in this country to give power back to ordinary people. We need severe, like systematic changes. Like on the subject of taxation, I listened to, you know, the debate in Botany, and the Labor Party candidate said, "All of us know that less money in means less money out." But what he didn't say was that all of us know that if government takes in, say, $100 from you, $100 doesn't come out. In fact, it's about 1 to 35 as a ratio. Because government itself is an inefficiency. It's a huge, and even if it's public, even versus private or whatever, it's an inefficiency. So if you take a huge amount of taxation from people, i.e. 60% of their wages in most Western nations in some form of tax, they will only get, in social services, you know, less than 20% back.
Yeah, but
I argue you don't take 60% from them in the first place.
Well, no, my argument is, where is it going? That is the issue.
It's always going to be inefficient. Is government ever going to be as efficient as people deciding what to do with their own money?
Because, yeah, but I mean, how does that work? So individuals are going to put are going to put pipes in the street for their water, so individuals are going to pay for roads, so individuals are going to set up these...
But taxation doesn't pay for roads, Penny. Taxation pays the foreign debt on interest incurred by us borrowing $300 to $400 million a week. Taxation doesn't pay for schools and roads and everything else. A basic 5% flat tax rate would pay for all that.
Yeah, well,
a basic level of taxation would pay
for
that.
We may agree to disagree on that. I mean, a flat tax rate, all that does is it means that it massively drops rate taxes for the rich. I mean, that's the reality. It's just like GST.
If someone's paying 10% of $1 million or 10% of $10,000, who's paying more? I mean, you know, it's obvious.
Yeah, I prefer not to get diverted on this issue at this time, but my argument is that at the moment, and it is a fact, the public don't know where the money's going. And I think the first thing to do is you need to have the facts. The public need to know that, because you've got to have a factual foundation, an evidential base from which to work. And what they do is they baffle you with garbage, because people, they just make it up. They make it up. And I don't think that that is good enough. And that's one of the main reasons why...
Well, that's the first thing is get
the facts. Because, I mean, I've asked questions no one's asked. I mean, you know, you've seen the video clip where I bailed up John Key at a public meeting, and I asked him to his face, was he personally profiting from New Zealand's growing indebtedness? And he knew it was coming, because he's actually a shareholder in the Bank of America, and that is actually on the register of pecuniary interest for New Zealand's MPs. And what I wanted to know is exactly to whom has New Zealand become indebted, and is the Bank of America in any way, shape or form one of those parties? Because what that means, if that is the case, while New Zealand gets increasingly indebted, John Key's sitting on the side rubbing his hands because he's got shares in the Bank of America.
So the country goes down, he goes up. Now, I was wondering, Penny, his response to this question was more or less to just dodge the question itself and say that, yes, I do have shares in the Bank of America because of such and such reason. I used to work for Merrill Lynch, longstanding shareholders. But the most interesting part of his response was that he claimed that he had no idea whether or not New Zealand was being in debt to them. Does that mean he has no idea whom the country is indebted? And if so, would that mean that as a prime minister, the so-called captain of the Kiwi ship is derelict in his duties?
Well, I think that's a fair point. I mean, I wouldn't believe a word John Key says. I mean, I'm a person who's taken a private prosecution against John Key, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, but over the Transrail matter back in 2008, I made a formal complaint to the police and the Serious Fraud Office, because not only had John Key failed to disclose his pecuniary interest in Transrail, at a time it was an item of business before the House of Parliament, and he'd asked oral and written questions about that, John Key attempted to flush out commercially sensitive information from which he could financially gain through an Official Information Act request to the Treasurer, Michael Cullen. And when Treasury staff advised Michael Cullen not to release the information because it was commercially sensitive, Shonky John Key made a complaint to the Ombudsman. Now, I ran this past a top QC, Queen's Counsel lawyer in New Zealand, and he wasn't so much fussed about John Key's failure to disclose. But when I said he tried to get this information through an Official Information Act request and made a complaint to the Ombudsman when it wasn't forthcoming, that's when he said nah. And he suggested that I take a private prosecution under Section 228 of the New Zealand Crimes Act, which was use or attempt to use a document for pecuniary gain. Well, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I mean, well, old me, do it yourself, Kiwi Shell. I trot down to the Auckland District Court. This is after the police and Serious Fraud failed to lift a finger. And so I file a private prosecution. And the day before the election, District Court Judge Anne-Marie Boucher, she throws it out. She claims it's vexatious and not a prima facie case, which is absolute garbage because I've got all the facts and evidence. But, of course, you can imagine the pressure the judge would be under. and so, cut a long story short, I did appeal to the High Court after the election, and I got a judicial decision where this High Court judge stated that John Key, like any other citizen, had the right to make an Official Information Act request. Well, that is just bollocks, because in those circumstances, when he stood to gain financially, I believe that was judicial endorsement of a corrupt practice. So John Key knows who I am. And I don't believe there's anybody else that's taken a private prosecution. And Vinny knows, because we spent three afternoons going through the Herald archives at the Auckland Public Library about 3 months before the 2008 election. And we looked page after page after page for one sentence that mentioned my complaint to the police or serious fraud about John Key or my private prosecution attempt in the district court. Not one sentence. And yet,
but there were plenty of articles praising John Key for being the bringer of change and hope to New Zealand.
But more importantly, there were man-on-the-moon headlines. It was a concerted media campaign against New Zealand First and Winston Peters, because they didn't want him to get, or the party to get 5%, because that would have made a big difference to the election, because under New Zealand's MMP, it's all about coalitions. And it was absolutely sling political mud at the wall day after day, man in the moon headlines, but Winston Peters was never being accused of feathering his own nest. But that's effectively what I was accusing John Key of doing. And yet not one sentence in the Herald. So it is my considered opinion that when it comes to elections, we get who the majority of big business want us to have. And well, how that, do they do that?
That's really straight up, Penny, because what was it? The editorial section, I believe, a month or two before the election was taking place, amidst all this kind of drama surrounding Winston Peters. This little clip here, 93% of business CEOs prefer John Key as the next Prime Minister of New Zealand. Well, who do we get as the next Prime Minister of New Zealand? Who the CEOs want.
Yeah, very, very good point. And also, they were equally clear, the CEOs, they did not want Winston Peters to be, or New Zealand First, to be part of any coalition with Labour or National. And so what we had was an absolute concerted corporate media campaign, and it was a disgrace. And so my simple peasant view was, well, if the majority of CEOs don't want Winston Peters or New Zealand First, well, that works for me. That's what I'm going to vote for, or vote for New Zealand First party vote. But I mean, so you've just got to apply a bit of basic common sense here. But what's really interesting is one of the key people that was involved in that corporate media campaign against Winston Peters and New Zealand First, David Farrar, who puts out Kiwi Blog, the most widely read blog in New Zealand, right-wing blog. And I went toe-to-toe with him in the comments section. And what I did, I said that he had run a very effective campaign. And what I did, because it's like they're trying to do it again, bring up all this stuff from the past, but nothing's accusing Winston Peters of feathering his own nest. So what I did, I put a link to the video that you did, Vinny, is John Key Shonky, that we did back in 2008, where I'm explaining to people why I took a private prosecution against John Key. Well, a lot of people hadn't seen that in 2008, and I'm really hopeful that a lot more people will see it now.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the election campaign, I mean, and I say this all the time, the elections in New Zealand are always a very, very frustrating time for me, because despite the fact that we have good people out there fighting and trying to campaign to get themselves elected on some description of platform that isn't completely insane, they don't seem to get any media darling status. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our special guest is Penny Bright. We'll be right back. And welcome back. I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we all get, but the system fails. We got to change. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. with Will, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. We have interviewed so many ridiculously awesome people, and there is a lot of knowledge now being accumulated at the archive sections of The Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you are a Kiwi, a Yankee, a Brity, or if you just want to feel a little bit pretty with your knowledge, go to TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com, check out the archives, and inform yourself by listening to people who have, well, experience in areas that you probably don't. Speaking of which, our very special guest, Penny Bright, now joins us. Now, Penny, the topic that we're going to be discussing now in the final segment of the first hour is state capture. What is state capture?
Well, state capture is where vested interests get their way at the policy level before legislation is passed. And it is a form of grand corruption that I believe that we have in endemic proportions in New Zealand. How did we get Rogernomics in the first place? And what I where I became familiar with this term was at the Transparency International Conference that I went to in Bangkok in November last year. And this huge light bulb went ping. I thought, oh my God, that's what happened with the super city, for example. What happened was we had a group called the Committee for Auckland, which was like the New Zealand Business Roundtable and Drag, CEOs of major businesses with a few add-ons like corporate Māori and corporate charity to sort of give them a slightly more sanitised look. And what they were doing was lobbying government. And what happens is policy analysts attached to different government departments, they are very slanted and biased with whom they consult. And what they do is they treat vested interests as if they are independent third parties when they are not. And the classic example of that was with the 35-year water contracts that got railroaded through New Zealand and the Local Government Act 2002, Amendment Act 2010. And what happened was there was groups like the New Zealand Council for Infrastructural Development, which basically represent all the big private snouts lining up who would benefit from the 35-year contracts, and they were treated as if they were a third party. And they're not. They're a vested interest. And what happened was there's an organisation called Local Government New Zealand, which sounds very official. Well, they're not a creature of statute. They don't come under any law in New Zealand. They're an incorporated society. But somehow they've just made it up that they claim to be the voice to speak on behalf of 85 councils all over New Zealand. Well, guess what? They took corporate sponsorship for their Local Government New Zealand conference last year in the Sky City, and they received... So they receive corporate money from some of these very same corporates who stand to benefit from the 35-year water contracts. And not only that, Local Government New Zealand then send out recommendations to 85 councils all over the country advocating for them to support the 35-year water contracts. Well, I want to take an official complaint against bribery and corruption against Local Government New Zealand, and I've already discussed with the lead person in New Zealand from the Serious Fraud Office, General Manager known as Nick Patterson, had a meeting with him a few weeks ago, and he said they would look at anything I gave them. And I said, Nick, have you ever heard of state capture? He looked absolutely blank, and he said, no, he wasn't familiar with it. And I'm thinking, well, good God, if this is the type of grand corruption that's endemic in this country, and the lead officer from the lead agency's never heard of it, no wonder New Zealand's regarded as the least corrupt country in the world.
Well, our country was founded as a corporation, that's the truth of it, by the East India Company. And we run as corporate entities with our names and block capitals, and the whole thing's a corporate takeover. So to me, it doesn't surprise me. Our money is corporately issued, and I would argue that the motivations larger than people hold in private stock in foreign companies, the motivations for them selling public assets to them, are also linked to the fact that we're indebted hugely, and John Key's trying to almost sell the house in order to keep the house. It's kind of like a mortgagee sale right now, and he knows we're going under.
Well, it is very interesting. Like for example, where I have now learnt where to look, what happens is, at the policy stage, before the legislation is passed, that is an absolute no-go area for the Office of the Auditor General or the Ombudsman. They are third-party statutory watchdogs who are supposed to have as part of their job description things like corruption, etc. They're parties to whom you can make a complaint, but you cannot make a complaint about anything to do with policy. They do not go there. They are prohibited by statute from going there. So where do you go to find out about making a complaint about state capture? Well, guess what? I've just done an Official Information Act request to our Minister of Justice asking exactly that question. The first is, what definition of state capture is used in New Zealand, and to whom should one make a complaint about state capture? So I tell you right now, there'll be policy boffins round in Wellington running around tearing their hair out because they will not want to put a reply under an official ministerial letterhead that says we have no such information. But I think that's what they're going to have to do, because if the lead officer from the lead organisation hasn't heard of state capture, who the hell has? You track them from within. And this is a handy tip I give to people. If you ever want to know about a process, you ask for those who are responsible for that process to spell out their process and get it on their letterhead, and then you throw it back in their face. Handy hints that'll cost a dollar, okay, just kidding. All right, so it's exciting, it's really exciting stuff, and what's happening is I'm the only candidate in the Botany... Oh.
You're the only candidate in the Botany by-election that seems to be standing as somewhat of an independent that actually seems to have a shot. Indeed, you're one of the only quote-unquote fringe people who was even allowed. Like I say, so-called fringe.
Because last time I stood as an independent candidate in a by-election, I got second. I got over 6,500 votes. I was second. So I am not.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Penny's got a good shot. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're in the Botany region, I'd encourage you to vote for her. Her website is waterpressure.wordpress.com. That's waterpressure.wordpress.com. Thanks very much for coming on with us today, Penny. Coming up next hour, we're going to be talking about alternative health. Back in a moment.